collecting coffee. I apologise, it's a bit slow. But, we'd like to get on with the next session and try and keep the time. As we said, we've got a very busy session. I think we've got an idea of the way the day is progressing. We've had a good review of the situation and we're moving into some more specific stuff now. The role of UCAS is the subject of the next paper. Paul Sennett is chief executive of that association, and I'm sure we'll make it very clear what is the purpose of UCAS and what the benefits of UCAS involvement in your business or the necessity for UCAS involvement may be. Paul.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Try and cover this in three sort of short sections. Firstly, a bit about UCAS. I think it was mentioned in coffee breaks on the stage, sort of perhaps we'll learn something about the shady organisation that we run. So we'll give you an idea of how we run, what we are as a company, and actually all the areas that we work in, because we cover quite a lot of areas in the UK, sort of with government mandates, as well as food, and then finally look at a few specific things that we do in the food industry that hopefully is relevant for you. So, actually, use this. So, what are we? We are something called the National Accreditation Body, and several times throughout this presentation I'll use some quite arcane language, but really there's lots of confusion in terms and people sort of freely interchange certification and accreditation, and perhaps for you, some of the end users, they are very much the same things, but for our purposes we have some very specific remarks we like to make, and in the sort of boilerplate definitions, very much we're looking at the competence of organisations to perform specific tasks. And one of the things, whatever area that we're accrediting or whatever type of organisation we're accrediting, we're wanting to see that these organisations are competent to perform these tasks, not just on the day that we're there, because you know, I've run companies before where we've had the UCAS accreditation or other types of certification, and of course everyone gets very busy and polishes things up on the day for the assessment, but what we're really looking for is to get under the skin and see that it's all working and carrying on in the way that we expect when we're not there. And we cover a number of areas which fall into these categories: calibration, inspection, testing and certification. And one way or another, you may not think you're doing calibration, inspection, testing or certification, one way or another, with the type of standard to which we'll assess organisations, you will be. And I think it was John, the previous speaker, said he hadn't worked out who did accreditation of the assessment bodies, of inspection bodies. Well, here I am, so come and see me afterwards. And what we will do is assess organisations with their laboratories, inspection bodies, against various international standards. So certification bodies can be assessed against EN45000, there's another standard called ISO 17021, laboratories ISO 17025, and so on. So roughly there's a standard for it. Where did UCAS come from? Well, originally UCAS started its life as a rough agglomeration of a whole number of departments within the then Board of Trade or Department of Trade of Trade and Industry. So in 1995, under the then government, UCAS was spun out, all these departments brought together, and a company called UCAS, United Kingdom Accreditation Service, was set up. It's a private company. It operates totally self-funding. It doesn't get any government money to do that. But in being set up, it's known as something called, a rather strange organisation, called a company limited by guarantee, non-profit distributing. So in colloquial speak, that means we run UCAS as a not-for-profit company. So in effect, we make a surplus, it gets ploughed back within the business. For corporate governance, ideally you should have shareholders who look over the shoulders of the board and non-executive directors. We don't have shareholders because obviously if we had shareholders they'd expect a dividend and they'd be putting pressure on UCAS to sort of up prices to give even bigger dividends. But we do have something called members, and they're
just like shareholders with all normal shareholders' powers, except that if or when we have our annual general meeting, which is this time next week, like for instance, we don't declare a dividend. They don't get anything out of UCAS for their membership, and should UCAS at any time decide to fold up or close its doors, then their membership share is worth nothing to them. I think they get the original pounds back and nothing more, and any remaining funds in UCAS have to go to a similar not-for-profit organisation. Now, having said that we're a private company, you might think, well, actually, this looks pretty much like a government body because there's a royal crown there. Well, we are a private company, totally private business. However, we operate under a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills, short name BIS, and we have a whole list of requirements that we have to meet. And by meeting those, we get appointed as the National Accreditation Body, and they also allow us to use the Royal Crown in our sort of logo, which again is a very valuable thing. But to link in with some things that both Kevin said earlier and John said previously, there is a whole chain that goes up that eventually sees the chain of command of UCAS actually ending up in a sister European directorate. So John said he was from or linked into DG, Sanko, the accreditation chain goes into a sister European directorate, something called DG Enterprise. So BIS, Department of Business, is required by the European Union, or the British government, is required by the European Union to comply with a regulation called EU 76508, for the zealots amongst you that might want to read this. And basically, that requires every European country to have a national accreditation body. If you're trying to get into the European Union, let's say countries such as Croatia or Bosnia, and formerly it was the, some 20 years ago, it was countries such as Hungary and Slovakia, you must have an accreditation body, because part of what we do is about seeing there's a free movement of products and services throughout the EU without so-called technical barriers to trade. And I think, a phrase that Kevin put in his presentation, which says something like, tested once, accepted everywhere. With many areas in the EU, or certainly when it started, it was saying, this product meets European guidelines, but unfortunately it doesn't meet local German guidelines, so it can't come in. So the aim is you have a national accreditation body. If the product has been accredited to an internationally recognised standard or one that is recognised in Europe, and that's normally has the prefix ISO to it, then you can't have an internal technical barrier of trade. So EU regulations came out that required something called the National or the Accreditation Act was passed in 2009, which recognises in law the role of UCAS and what we do, and through the memorandum of understanding with BIS, we are appointed as the National Accreditation Body. I mentioned earlier that we had members rather than shareholders, and if you look at the list, you might think, well, that's a pretty disparate group of people to have on the list, but largely they're aimed to do two things. Be fairly representative of the areas that we work in as an organisation, and of course give some balance between the stakeholder groups. So if you're looking for areas of food industry or food interests, we've got BEFRA, we've got Food Standards Agency, BRC there as one of our, in effect, shareholders there. Equally to the other areas we work in, because if you go to a doctor and he says we're going to have to take a sample and send it to the lab, or you're in the hospital and have a biopsy, those samples will end up in a UCAS accredited laboratory because there's something called Clinical Pathology Accreditation Stand, so we accredit all those areas. So hence we have stakeholders from the Department of Health on there and so on. And you can express that another way. We try and represent, we try and have a balance, and this is the way that UCAS, in the small print of how we are governed, both in the Memorandum of Understanding and another ISO standard, which I'll come on to in a minute, we're required to maintain some sort of balance between all our various stakeholders. So direct customers, each a number of trade associations, that, for example, a certification body trade association or a laboratory trade association, safety federation for the engineering inspection industries, various end users, consumer interests. One of my concerns about the membership, and actually UKEF cannot say who comes on as the members, again, part of the democracy of the organisation, it's the members decide who comes on as a new member. Occasionally I do drop a subtle hint that we do need to extend our membership in certain areas, but equally one of my concerns is we get top heavy with government representation or over-represented by government, but of course it's good to have responsibility because certainly one of the features of UCAS over the past years, it started with the last government, I suppose I could say it's actually a good trend, and it's been very strongly emphasised by the current administration, which is government has now sort of woken up to the fact that if they want to control something, rather than set up yet another government inspectorate or government checking agency, they're looking to use some form of accreditation, so accreditation of laboratories, accreditation of organisations through inspection or personnel certification or product certification so they have trust in it. And obviously some of these people, the Department of Business, DEFRA, DPA, that's another acronym for that's Defence Procurement Agency or Ministry of Defence, who are the single biggest procurers in the UK economy, Health and Safety Executive, Food Standards Agency, Health Protection Agency and the Department of Health. So these represent a number of areas where we work. Additionally to having sort of a whole range of members covering a range of things, the 20 or so members that we have on board, they really scratch the surface of the wider stakeholder group. So we have policy advisory committees to come and give their views. So one way or another, although perhaps to the outside, if you don't really get involved with UCAS, it might seem a sort of rather distant and shadowy organisation. There are actually through a whole range of areas. I mean, if we run back quickly through some of the areas, there we've got, you know, Confederation of British Industry, Federation of Small Business, Chartered Quality Institutes, and so on, a whole number of professional and trade associations where people can interact and actually join in these organisations. So let's try and build up, and I think, I hope this echoes some of the charts that have been put up previously, where accreditation comes in and why accreditation can be important. So if we say one way or another, whether it's government, consumers, purchasers, and it could be a purchaser in the form of a major multiple retailer, they're looking to have confidence, trust and insurance in the products or services they're getting. And of course one of the ways that you do that is to say, does it meet the standard or does it meet a requirement? And this is the another bit of jargon word that comes in. If you are providing a product or service and you say we're going to meet the quality standard, let's say ISO 9000 for the sake of argument here, the person or the organisation that grants you the ISO 9000, normally called a certification body in the technical parlance, it's called a conformity assessment body. But of course in the range of areas that UCAS works in, it could be a testing, calibration, certification, index, blah blah blah, inspection body and so on. And of course they will conformity assess, or they will check our conformity to, it could be a standard, it could be a scheme. Very often it's a regulatory requirement, so we accredit all the forensic science labs in the UK and enters into the national DNA database, and that comes under certain legal requirements that we're required to work to. So again, you can say, right, great, you've got your ISO 9000 certificate, it's been granted by a conformity assessment body, but how do you know that you can trust a conformity assessment body? And quite often, you can't, quite simply. I spend a lot of time, I seem to find myself stuck for an enormous amount of time on the M25. There's not a lot better to do than look at sort of white vans going past. And most of those have massive ISO 9000 symbols on with big ticks on their frame, you know, quality supplier, quality builder. And these have come from a non-accredited certification body. Now, some of them may be good, but I speak from my personal experience. If you delve back into my CV at one time, some years ago, I was part of a board of a company, it's a 3i-backed venture capital company, and we were buying businesses to put them together. We created a flavour and ingredients business. And I was doing the buying of the companies, and I remember doing some of the technical due diligence on two of the businesses we were buying, and of course I was highly reassured because they all had ISO 9000, so these should be sort of good quality manuals. So going through the various quality manuals, and much to my surprise, they were identical. I think I got to about page 25 of their respective quality manuals. You could just turn them page to page. They came from the same certification body, and it had just been a cut and paste of Company A's name in the quality manual for Company B's name. I mean, quite frankly, I can say this because we bought the company. The system wasn't worth the paper it was printed on. It did nothing to enhance quality in the organisation. And the ISO 9000 certificate was granted by a non-accredited certification body. So all I would say is, if you go and get a certificate from a certification body or any organisation, please make sure that they are accredited, which is where we come in. And I'm pleased to say all of the organisations outside, your DMVs and Intertex and SIA Global, somewhere on their forms they'll have a UCAS logo to say they've been accredited. And why does what does UCAS accreditation do? Well, actually, it does ensure that we will assess the conformity of assessment bodies to international standards, which could be the ISO standards for inspection bodies or certification standards. And again, we try and apply a degree of rigour so that whilst we name some of the names out there, you've got Intertek, you've got SII Global, GMV, Detmold, Spiritus. Within the various ways that they can give you an offer about providing certification to the organisation, and of course they can have quite different approaches, what we can say with a degree of confidence, because we have assessed them to an international standard, however they carry out their certification and apply it to your organisation, they are actually meeting the international standard. Of course, in many things we do, it's actually the government is now requiring us to check these organisations so they can rely on the certification to give them confidence that they don't need to appoint a government inspector. So, for example, gas safe, the called gas scheme is such a thing, or as I said, forensic science laboratories, because they've all been privatised. If you think UCAS gets an easy ride because we're there, conveniently painted ourselves at the top of the tree, and we don't ever get checked. Well, of course, apart from the checks that we have from the government, from the Department of Business, as a mandate coming down from DG Enterprise, we are required to be peer evaluated by our fellow European accreditation bodies. And I'll come on to that in a moment, what actually happened to us. But I thought just at this point, a short recap for dispelling a few myths. Sometimes here, someone will phone me up or send me an irate letter saying, how dare UCAS issue such a standard, or how can UCAS actually write this standard? Well, the answer is, we don't write standards, pure and simple. I would actually add, ISO doesn't do any accreditation either. So ISO, International Standards Organisation, they write the standards, issue the standards internationally. In the UK, BSI, British Standards Institution, are our national standards body, and they feed into ISO. You sometimes wonder, you think, well, if I was running a business, I wouldn't run it like that. And certainly from my previous business experience, there are things that UCAS has to do. So we ourselves are assessed to a standard called ISO 17011. It's the standard for accreditation bodies. We have to meet that. We have to do certain things. We have to demonstrate that we have carried out certain things. So again, that makes UCAS work in a particular way. And of course, how we actually assess a standard is coloured not only by the requirements of ISO 17011 placed on us, but the scheme owners and stakeholder input. So again, we work with people like GFSI, obviously BRC, because they have a view of if this standard is going to be used by certification bodies, they have a view how they would like UCAS to accredit the certification bodies who are running that standard. So it's part of a circular dialogue. But equally, we do need stakeholder input, because occasionally standards can get somewhat out of control or not be suitable for accreditation. roughly at the moment, there's a big push for accreditation. Just if I look back over the past 5 years, UCAS has now doubled the size it was for some 5 years ago with the growth and the requirement for accreditation. And we're getting something like 30 or 40 approaches to accredit new standards and new schemes every year. Only about a quarter of them get through, because quite frankly, either the standard hasn't been written well enough, or it's not thought through well enough, or sometimes it's just a very subtle approach for an industry segment to create some sort of cartel. If you do this, if you use this sort of equipment, if you follow these procedures, you can get accredited. And of course, when we consult with the stakeholders, that comes out. The other aspect is, sometimes standards are actually not raising the bar in any shape or form. There was actually, a couple of years ago, a fantastic scheme sponsored by a government department. Slightly sorry to say, but it was actually a great idea to get rid of the cowboy builders, that's the standard for that. Fantastic idea, and it looked great until we started to examine it in some detail, and then you realised that you could gain accreditation and recognition under the scheme if you joined your trade association, filled out a self-completion questionnaire. So again, when you look, you speak to the standard owners and say, you know, is that really rigorous? Is that going to raise standards in the market? And then people say, well, that's all we want to do because no one's willing to pay more than £200 to get accredited or certified. It's at that point you realise there is a problem in the system, it's not going to achieve anything. And apart from the fact, we as an accreditation body would be something that wouldn't meet the requirements of 1711 on a personal level, and as I say, governmental level, we're not putting our badge on it if it isn't actually at a certain level of quality. So just to run through very quickly a whole range of things we do, could be quality management and a number of government departments supporting them, drinking water inspectorates, we're doing environmental management, and actually that was a good example again of where sponsors of schemes or standards actually work with UCAS and the stakeholders to raise the standard and get a result. Some several years ago, it was the Environment Agency under the aegis of DEFRA, basically said if an organisation gains certification to ISO 14000, we'll put them on a lighter touch inspection regime, so less of a governmental burden from the Environment Agency. And that brought about a whole number of people becoming certified, accredited certification to ISO 14000. The Environment Agency monitored the schemes, and guess what? Pollution, well, actually, I shouldn't say guess what, but it was, that's what happened. Pollution incidents remained pretty much constant, not a lot happened, and that's where they then got involved with UCAS and all the industry trade bodies to say, this really isn't delivering, we need to up the standards, we need more rigorous certification assessments, and we need UCAS to actually be much more rigorous in the way it assesses the certification bodies. Wasn't an easy thing to get through, but it did happen, and it has actually now, we're now seeing some very useful results coming out of that. So obviously food safety and quality, national DNA database, mentioned those, whole other range of industry areas, medical laboratories, as I say, obviously medical tests, and imaging services, so whether it's radiology, ultrasound scans, MRI scans, we're accrediting those. So these are some things that we work on. So, just looking now what we do in the food area, apart from all those other areas that we're busy with in UCAS, obviously we assess and will accredit you if you're a conformity assessment body. So, if you're in a food factory, UCAS won't come and directly assess you, because the food factory itself, food manufacturer, isn't a conformity assessment body. Mind you, if you have a laboratory in your factory, that could be accredited because that is a conformity assessment organisation. So we directly accredit some 150 micro labs in the UK and some 100 chemistry labs. And of course we accredit a number of certification bodies, some 150 in all. And I suppose I put these names up simply, they're the first ones that came into my head, so please don't think these are recommended, you know, to use the time-honoured phrase, other certification bodies are available. So if your name's on there, don't think we've got to mention, don't go out saying we've got to mention from the chief exec, therefore we must be the best. Others are there, you know, there's some big oats like them. You might mention organic farms and growers and soil association and so on. And of course, whilst we accredit many labs, it's the certification schemes that probably affect the industry wide. So if you look at some of the bigger certification bodies in the UK, and we talk about perhaps one of the most popular standards which they accredit, ISO 9000, then you know, one of those big organisations we issue something like 40,000 certificates a year. So obviously a big reach in that area. And again, this is a run through some of the food standards that come under the, or let's say are certified by UCAS accredited certification bodies, so obviously BRC, ISO 22000, big plug there, Kevin, I didn't realise you were going to be in the audience today, but GFSI recognised, everything from Scottish quality salmon, again, total oversight, I'm not putting anything about organic food, which we, again, they all come under our area, so I could have gone on for another two or three pages, but with the various schemes that we accredit, you can look on our website and see all the areas that are UCAS accredited. And we're nearly there. So let's just have a quick run through what we look for when we come and check either an organisation, but most specifically a certification body. We're looking to see that you have processes in place, and this really goes back to our earlier, the second speech on this morning, to say, you know, is it there delivering good administration of everything you do? The main thing is, what you say you're doing, is it actually active in your organisation? Is it, I think John put a picture up of rusty or dusty old quality manuals on the shelf, are they actually used? And do you really check, are people really checking the competence of the auditors they're using? So the fact that someone had a particular degree, perhaps in food science, food technology, like myself, sort of, which was in 1979, was released from the University of Reading, and into society, and but does that make me confident to do an audit? No, it doesn't, because I've been out of the food industry directly involved in a number of years. But we want to see that there is objective evidence for the decisions that are made, and actually that the auditing skills are declined, because you can have a very competent person, extremely technically qualified, they don't have the right skills to actually get under the skin of the organisation, you know, their questioning techniques, their tenacity, they're fobbed off easily, so we need to be able to see that they can apply their experience. Final one is, and hopefully do this in the next 90 seconds, we are required to be peer reviewed by the European Corporation for Accreditation. This goes up and reports into DG Enterprise, and it's through EA. They have also mutual recognition and peer review arrangements with other global accreditation organisations, which means all of the European accreditation bodies recognise each other, and that they are all in various blocks around the world. Now this slide might look 10 years old, and that's because in fact it is. Since someone kindly developed this slide, for example, there are now some 10 or 12 accreditation bodies in South America. The problem is the slide's already full and we can't get any more names on there, but I must try and get someone to volunteer to do a new one. I'm pleased to say actually UCAS has been involved in establishing a large number of these organisations. So we helped establish in Metro and Brazil, we've been training the Argentinian and Chilean organisations. We're doing a lot currently in the Middle East that training now and get accreditation bodies up and running. But the idea is we have on there a term, the ILAC arrangement. Kevin, it's the sister body, but it's all part of the same network. Kevin talked about something called IAF, International Accreditation Forum. Basically, what it's saying is, if you get a certificate that perhaps comes from New Zealand, IANS, because we're all part of the same mutual recognition organisation, it can be recognised in the Netherlands, or is equivalent to an Irish certificate. So one way or another, a certification body certifying product to BRC standards somewhere in the world. If you're in the multilateral agreements, you can say that we've all peer reviewed each other. So this map is, as I said, ILAC, it's interchangeable with IAF, and it is, for the purposes of this meeting, it's one and the same organisation. So that's another version of that. So just to save time, just to recap, you know, UCAS doesn't write the standards, but obviously we accredit them, we're required to meet the way we ourselves have to work with something called ISO 17011, but obviously I hope that by showing you the structure of UCAS and how we work, there is a degree of continuous dialogue with members to make the standards work and also help us improve the way that we carry out our assessments. And your active participation, either personally or through trade associations or other organisations which you are affiliated, is welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. I think that's made it less.